Welcome to the Jacob's Well podcast. These messages are intended to feed you some great stuff that you can really dig your teeth into all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime, along with other great resources and ways to keep the conversation going at jacobs-well.net/leftovers. Enjoy the message.
Good morning, Jacob's Well. Thank you. Good morning, Jacob's Well. Thank you. That was much better the second time around. I appreciate it. So as Garrett said, my name's Chris Lillehei. My wife Jenny and I and our little daughter Chloe, have been a part of Jacob's Well for the last year or so. Chloe's a little less than that because she's only about 3.5 months old. But we've been a part of this community for a little while, and I've had the chance of being with you and speaking with you on Sunday morning a couple times so far, and I cherish the invitation back, so thank you for having me. I really appreciate that. We're in the middle of a series called Care IQ. What this series is about is how do we walk with people and how do we ask people to walk with us as we face really difficult times in our lives, times that aren't fixable, times that aren't easy, times where our normal way of caring for one another no longer works. So the first week, Greg did a wonderful job of kind of setting up the series, and I talked to a bunch of you, and we all were kind of eager for more. Last week, Greg and Christina did a wonderful job of setting up this idea of creating a toolbox for what Care IQ means. How do we start to bring together some ways of helping each other walk through these processes? And today we're doing a little practice. Some practice of some tools, of ways to walk with people as they face some really difficult and hard challenges. So what I do professionally is I am a hospital chaplain resident at Abbott Northwestern Hospital. Oftentimes when I see people at parties and they ask me, what do you do for a living? And I tell them that, they just look at me blankly like most of you are doing right now. What a hospital chaplain is we're part of the spiritual care department. So we're on the team of medical professionals that are caring for individuals. And our specific role within that is to care about people in a deeper spiritual level, to connect them with what gives them meaning in life as they face some really tough crises. Hopefully you haven't had to encounter a hospital chaplain, but if you have, that it's been a help for you. And so I think a lot of what spiritual care means and what we do as a spiritual care department goes right hand in hand with our Care IQ series. So I might slip a few times and say spiritual care instead of Care IQ. I mean the same thing. So we have a couple goals as spiritual care, as chaplains within the hospital, that I think mirror kind of what our goals are as a community in this Care IQ series. The first is figuring out, how do we become a less anxious or non-anxious presence within a situation? So as we enter into these moments of hardships, how do we enter into them with some sort of reduced anxiety? Realizing that when we face these Care IQ situations, oftentimes the anxiety is incredibly high. We've all felt that way at some point while facing loss or death, or a job loss, our anxiety becomes high. And so as caregivers, we're working to find ways to reduce that anxiety by just showing up and not adding to that anxiety, but instead being a non-anxious or less anxious presence. The second goal of spiritual care that I think is really important is the realization that God is already there. So often we feel this responsibility to walk into a room bearing a golden cross and saying, God is with us, and we're bringing God into this situation. But the realization is that these situations of Care IQ, of crises, are oftentimes when God is very present. And what our goal is spiritual care, and I think, again, our goal as a Care IQ series is to recognize this presence, create space for this presence. We get the honor of being spiritual partners with each other on this journey of life. So we get the honor then when times are hard to enter into these situations and talk about the tough stuff. Talk about how we feel God is present, or maybe how we don't feel God is present in these hard times. So I want to start off with a little bit of a story of a situation that I recently came into. So one of the floors that I work on as a hospital chaplain is the locked mental health ward. So I work with people facing some really difficult challenges. And this one young lady in particular had attempted suicide on 3 different occasions. She was in a tough spot in life. So I met her a couple different times. We had some pretty good conversations, and we're connecting really well. And so our final conversation, we started talking, and I'd introduced myself as a spiritual care and kind of giving that whole spiel and in previous conversations. And then this final conversation, and she turns to me and she goes, "Are you religious?" I was like, "Oh man, I didn't do a very good job of explaining who I am, I guess." And like many of you in the Jacob's Well community, that's a tough question. Are we religious? Are we spiritual? What do the connotations of religion mean? And so I kind of said, "Well, yeah, I guess so." She goes, "Oh, well, then we could have talked about some much deeper stuff." Okay. And so I said, "Well, why don't we start talking about that now?" And so she started talking about her opinion of who God is. And she didn't really know. She was struggling through those questions of who God is with her. And so she turned to me at one point and asked, "Well, what do you believe about God?" Again, not an easy question. I've been to seminary for a couple of years, taken a long route, and I've worked on these things, and I still don't know the answer to those questions. They still catch me off guard. So I started going into this. I really felt like it was an authentic view of who God is. And I said, "You know, I believe that God is in all of us. That there's a piece of God within all of us." And I kind of went on that journey of saying, sometimes we can't feel that. Sometimes we can't see that within ourselves. But God is still there. There's still that strength within us. And then I started going a little too far. And I started talking about this term, Imago Dei. It's the Latin term for the image of God. And here I'm thinking, my goodness, I'm getting way too heady. It's this young person who's facing these crises in life, and I'm starting to talk Latin to them. And So we ended the conversation, and I left. And then the next day I came back in, and one of the nurses walked up to me and said, "There's a letter from that young lady for you." And that kind of caught me off guard. We don't usually get that. And so I put the letter in my pocket, met with a few people, and then left the floor, and I opened up that letter. And this was a person who had attempted suicide on 3 different occasions. And I'm getting goosebumps just telling the story. This letter said, "Chris, I want to thank you for our meeting." And she said, "In occupational therapy today, I made a bracelet that said Imago Dei on it to remind me that I am in the image of God." And especially for a person that had tried to commit suicide and had cut herself on many occasions, to put it on her wrist, that she is the image of God. It blows my mind. I mean, I'm choked up. And it's not because I was able to say some beautiful words. Remember, I thought I totally blew it. She was giving me that blank stare that, like, "What are you talking about? You're speaking Latin to me." So it's not about being able to create these perfect sayings, but instead be authentic with who we are. That's the authentic view of how I believe God is with us and in us. And it really seemed to make an impact on this young lady. And so we're going to go through some tools of how we can start to feel a little bit more comfortable in these situations of Care IQ. But I want to start off with some things to avoid to start off with. So the first is expectations. I want to encourage us to leave those expectations outside of the situation. those expectations of how this person should be feeling, how they should be reacting to these situations, how they should be seeing themselves, and start to realize that those shoulds are not very helpful for us and not very helpful for the other person. This goes the same with saying of when we're facing those times of spiritual crisis or crisis in general, to realize there are no expectations, there is no right way to handle these things. There's no golden way, golden pathway to handle these situations. Instead, they're just tough situations that each individual person, as we're uniquely created, needs to handle it in our own way. I had a coworker of mine who lost his father after a long bout of Alzheimer's. And this guy is a very thoughtful individual, very, very smart and intelligent, probably would label himself agnostic or atheist, and just a really thoughtful guy. And a few weeks after the funeral, he came back to work, and I asked him, I said, so many times we talk about the unhealthy things that people say to us in those times of crisis, right? And I said, what was the one thing that people said to you that was really helpful? And he said, my cousin told me there's no wrong way to do this. There's no wrong way to handle your father's death. There's no wrong way to grieve. And he felt this freedom. He wanted to make jokes at his father's funeral, and he felt this guilt that he shouldn't be feeling this way. But instead, this saying that this person said to him was, gave him the freedom and the opportunity to mourn his father in the way that he needed to mourn his father, in an authentic way. Another example of expectations is last year I was doing an internship at another hospital, and I was called into the emergency department. I got paged there, and I met with a nurse, and they said that there was an older couple there, and the husband had just passed away. And they'd been married for 40, 50, 60 years, somewhere around that line. And so I had all these expectations of what this woman would be feeling, right? That she would be this grieving widow that was just devastated with her husband's loss. So I walk into the room, and there were two neighbors that were there and the woman, and the neighbors just left as soon as I walked in. I was like, well, that's a little interesting, but we'll go with it. And this woman was this elderly woman sitting in a wheelchair and just kind of weeping. And so I sat with her and I said, oh, I'm so sorry for your loss. I'm imagining that you're feeling really sad. And she kept saying, I don't know what to do next. I said, I understand grief is a tough, confusing place to be. And she just kept saying, I don't know what to do next, and kept interrupting me. And I was kind of confused. And finally, she turned to me and she goes, I'm so glad the sucker's dead. And I was like, oh, okay, we're going to switch gears here for a second. It turned out that he had been very abusive to her for the last 30 years. And she had, so much so that he had a fight with their daughter 12 years ago, she hadn't been able to see her own daughter for 12 years. So she was feeling this immense amount of freedom because this individual had passed away. So I had all of these expectations of what this person should be feeling. Should be feeling. But instead, she was in a celebratory mood. So the next thing to avoid as we enter into these situations is don't be afraid to set some boundaries. As caregivers or care receivers, to understand that, especially when it comes to time, that it's often helpful to know what those expectations for both parties involve of time. So when you're going to see somebody, tell them, let them know, I only have about 15 minutes to stop by, but I wanted to see you as you're in the hospital. I only have a half an hour, half a day. But let them know that this is what your expectation is of the time that you're going to stay there. And same goes for those that are receiving care. You get to claim that space. We just had a baby, obviously, a few months ago, and one of the nerve-wracking things about people coming over to meet the baby is we had no idea how long they were going to stay for. So we often got kind of nervous saying, well, we need to get rest, she needs to eat, we need to get her a nap. And so we weren't clear about setting those expectations and those boundaries of the amount of time that we wanted people to stay with us. So I want to encourage both sides of this caregiving and care receiving that those boundaries and expectations of time are okay. It seems kind of awkward, and we kind of want to avoid it, but oftentimes it can relieve a lot of that anxiety. Another way to be a non-anxious presence. The next is platitudes that give easy answers. I know that as Jacob's Well community, we don't really buy into this idea of platitudes often, that they're in a better place now, or that it's all part of God's plan, or that kind of sayings. And yet, you would be amazed at how when we face these situations of crisis, how often we want to go to those platitudes, or how often we hear those platitudes. And for those of us that have had to receive care from other people, it's amazing how unhelpful and oftentimes hurtful those platitudes can be. Well, they're in a better place now. Well, I'm still here. Why do they get to be in a better place while I'm sitting here? It's a fair question. It's all part of God's plan. So you mean it's part of God's plan that my infant passed away? That doesn't seem like a plan that I want to buy into. So I just want to encourage you to be careful of those platitudes that we use with one another. And I want to warn you that, and I'm speaking from experience now, how that urge often comes over us as we face these situations of crisis. And oftentimes we want to use these platitudes because they make us feel better. And as Greg talked about over the past couple of weeks, we have to realize that we're not receiving care in those situations. We're trying to help others. So as I say those platitudes, maybe that one little bit of information can relieve some of this pain so I can start to feel better. These situations aren't that easy to fix. And that's the final note that I want to add in the don'ts is don't try to fix the situation. That's not for us to do. That's not our role. And we'll go into this a little bit more later on this morning, but that's the role of that third strand. We're just inviting God into that process. That's something bigger than what we can handle as humans. And that's okay. So let yourself off the hook and let the person that you're caring for or the person that's caring for you off the hook of saying, these situations are not fixable. And how can we get comfortable with that? So at this point, I want to invite up my wife, Jenny. We can give her a round of applause because she's awesome. Jenny's been in the mental health field for, I think we decided, almost 10 years now.
It's getting close.
All right. And she's just going to help me as we address some of these questions. So, Karen, do we have any questions? I haven't told them about it. Darn it. No wonder we don't have any questions. So if you look at the top of your Sunday paper, there is a phone number that you can text with any questions that come up as we're addressing these situations. And I want to just let you know that this isn't about us being the experts and you all being the non-experts that are just seeking answers, but instead we want to involve you in this conversation of what help and care can look like. And so please feel free to either text in those questions, or if you're not in the texting generation, to just write them on a piece of paper and you can just hand them to Karen. And that's part of how Jacob's Well is. Just walk up as you feel comfortable and hand those questions over. Because we would love to just be, it doesn't even have to be questions. It can be comments or statements or times that you've faced hardships and maybe things have been helpful. So feel free to bring those up when they become appropriate. So we'll keep moving on, and we'll stop for some questions as we go. So the next thing that we want to talk about a little bit more is tools for care. So what are the tools that we can use as we address these situations? The first thing I want to admit is that there's no be-all, end-all tool. There's no tool that we can have that fixes every situation. So our goal is to start gathering tools and putting them in our toolbox. And these are just a few examples of what those tools can look like. And so the first of which is it seems really simple and kind of easy, but that oftentimes when people are particularly in a moment of severe crisis, the best medicine for them at that point is an ice-cold glass of water. You would be amazed at how often this particular tool just helps people take a pause from the issues that they're facing, from the hardships that they're facing, and just lets them breathe for a second. Helps them reset, reboot who they are. Also, for individuals that have been crying a lot, dehydration is a serious concern. And so by offering that cold glass of water, there's nothing worse than being mourning and dehydrated at the same time with that horrible headache, right? So you'd be amazed at this being the first avenue for care. The second is this, and I would like to invite Jenny into this conversation as well, but this concept of rating your pain. So we've all been to the hospital before, and they have those goofy smiley faces that say, like, rate your pain on a scale from 1 to 10. And I often look at them, and I'm like, well, my 10 is not your 10, because I'm clearly a lot tougher than you are, so you would probably say this is a 5. But what I think what is helpful for that is to gauge how you're improving on that scale. So it's not necessarily comparing yourselves to others, but instead it's taking a moment to say, where are you on that level? And one of the tools that we can use for this emotional and spiritual care is to ask people how they're feeling on a scale from 0 to 10. So if someone's facing depression, maybe ask, how bad is your depression, of 0 being the worst day you've had and 10 feeling completely better? Where are you on that scale? And oftentimes they'll say a 1 or a 2, and our tendency is that we want to move to a 10 right away, right? We want to get them to be all better immediately. But what I want to encourage us to start the conversation of is engaging that imagination within people of ways that they can get maybe one step higher. So if they're at a 2, what ways could we work to get you maybe to a 3? To make you feel a little bit better on that pain scale.
Yeah, and to add to that, I think that just helps us with our boundaries. It helps us say, yeah, we're not going to fix this, but yeah, we can help make it a little bit better. You know, maybe it is pulling someone else into the network, or maybe it is helping them, you know, take care of one thing around the house or with their kids. It makes it a little bit more manageable and bite-sized. So I think that's another way to look at it, too. It's helpful for you to set those boundaries and those limit some of those expectations.
I want to check in with Karen again just to see, do we have a few questions now that I've actually offered you guys the opportunity to do so?
Yes, we do have a few. One is, we often use those platitudes when we don't know what else to say. Mm-hmm. So how can we use our Care IQ to navigate those tough situations?
I think a big one, and we've talked, and Greg mentioned it, and Christina mentioned last week, but just breathing and creating space and being okay with silence. Sometimes it's okay to say nothing at all and just hold their hand, be there as a support and comfort, and not feel like you have to fill the void with something. I think oftentimes when people are grieving as well, when you create that space, it invites them to tell their story and to tell you what they need versus you filling in the blanks with those shoulds or those expectations and, you know, punting to kind of like a platitude or a blanket statement that might not fit that situation really well. So I think, you know, being comfortable with slowing down, taking a breath, and seeing if they even enter that space before you do.
And to get a little more on the God side of things, that the Hebrew word actually for spirit is ruach. And the same word for spirit is for breath. And so oftentimes by welcoming in that space for breath, it's the same as welcoming into the spirit of something bigger than who we are. And so I think that Jenny is absolutely correct there, that silence is not our enemy. And that part of what our goal is in this Care IQ is to recognize that that person has the wherewithal to face this situation, even if they don't feel like they can. And so giving them the opportunity to feel like they can address their own issues within these circumstances.
Another one kind of along with that is sometimes they can feel like they have to comfort you. Mm-hmm. So how do you frame a question where they can really get an honest, authentic answer?
I don't know if there's a right way to phrase it that I can think of, but I think there's just a level of authenticity in naming that situation. So say I know the tendency can sometimes be for you to care for other people, especially if you know those friends that always want to be the caregiver and never the care receiver, and to name that situation to say, I know that this is often hard for you to ask for help, but right now I'm here for you. And I think that oftentimes being that overt with our intentions can help to alleviate some of that.
And I think part of that is some of that self-care and getting your care outside of that situation. So if you have a friend that is facing a crisis, that they don't see themselves as that caregiver, that you can say, you know what, I know you're concerned about me, I know we're good friends, but right now this is about you and I want to be present for you. I'm gonna go hang out with so-and-so later, or I'm going to give so-and-so a call, and they can be the support that I lean on, but I really want to be present for you, so I would appreciate it if you would let me take care of you.
And then a little bit on the opposite, instead of if you're seeking out to support someone, if someone unexpectedly comes up to you, like a coworker, and shares something that's going on, what to do if someone's asking for care that you can't provide?
I think a part of it, again, is knowing your role. We talked a little bit about it last week, and Chris mentioned it again, that you don't have to be the one to fix everything, and being able to set some of those boundaries and recognize that, yep, I acknowledge you're going through this, this is really tough. You know, would you be okay if we asked somebody else, or we reached out to this resource, or, you know, I hear you, but can we maybe follow up in a little bit and see what I can find to support you with this situation? And asking for help and tagging someone in. And so I think those are ways when you kind of get abruptly, you know, in the office break room or at lunch, and when you don't necessarily, you know, you're reaching in your toolbox and you can't find the right tool, that's a great opportunity to, you know, pull the greater network of caregivers in and be able to set a boundary for yourself. That's okay.
Yeah, I think once again, just honesty within those situations of realizing your own limitations and that as human beings, we have limitations. And so we're going to move on a little bit and then come up back to a few questions as we move on. This next tool, I really, it's going to be a little bit of an explanation, so just hang with me. But I, as I talk to more and more people, I think, Jenny included, that this tool can be really helpful for how we communicate with others. So I want to start by saying that this has a three modes of communication, especially in a time of crisis. So don't think about it as a hierarchy, but think about it as three different channels that we can communicate through. The first of which is identity. The questions of, who am I now? So oftentimes you hear that as being some assurance that I'm still an okay person. So if I identify myself through my job, for example, and I lose my job, I'll oftentimes feel that need for assurance of who I am. The second communication, the second mode of communication is emotional or needs contracting. It doesn't necessarily always have to be about tears or emotions, but instead about things that I need right now. So I am sad. And so you'll often hear this with feeling words. That's another mode of communication. And then the final one is problem solving. So that's more of external, how do I move forward in this situation? And so what the danger that often happens is that when I'm communicating with somebody in a care situation, I'm communicating my needs in my identity, who I am. And what will happen often is that someone else will respond to me in the emotional mode of communication. And so both of us are working on communicating about this issue, but I'm not feeling heard because you're not hearing me on the mode, the channel of communication that I need to be heard on. Or I need you to be with me in my emotional needs right now. I'm feeling so sad. And you're over in the problem-solving mode. You're saying, what can I do to make you feel better? Can we start applying for jobs because you just lost your job? Do we have that tendency within us sometimes? So do you have anything to add? We're going to do a little bit of a role play here to just show you.
I think what was interesting about this is Chris presented this to me, and at first, the way he explained it made no sense to me because we come out of different modes of communication naturally. So it took him explaining it in my mode of communication for like the big light bulb to go off and be like, oh, we communicate differently. And so in many situations, even in our marriage, he'll be communicating one way and I'll be going the other way. And it does take that opportunity to sync up for us to actually address kind of the challenge that's going on. So I think that's one thing to note is that we do kind of tend to start from one and recognizing that another person might start from a different mode.
And none of these, it's not a hierarchy again. So none of these are better than anywhere else. I know that you might be thinking in your head, well, this one is clearly better. That probably is your tendency. And so just to recognize that my tendency is to stay in that identity mode. And so when people go to the emotional channel, I have to consciously switch my language to switch over to that emotional side. Or I'm in that problem solving. You know, let's get this fixed for you right now. And the reality is someone needs to be heard first. So the situation that we thought of is a job loss. And so even more specific than that, so I'm an individual who lost my job at Target as a buyer. So a very specific job and role. And Jenny's the individual giving care for me, mm-hmm. So a friend of mine. So pretend she's not my wife right now. Jenny, I really don't know who I am anymore. I lost my job.
I'm so sorry. You must be feeling so stressed out.
Well, I don't know about stressed. I just don't know even who I am anymore or how I can go on doing this.
So do you know how the job market is? Have you looked to see if there's openings? Are there other positions within Target?
I haven't even had time to look at that. I'm feeling so just down on who I can be and what does it mean to be me anymore?
Yeah, I mean I'm really bummed out for you. I mean you must just be so upset.
So see how we're missing each other there? Can you see kind of the nuances of I'm talking about my identity, who I am, and Jenny's just assuming that I'm in the emotional side, that I need to be heard on the emotional level. And then she switched because that didn't work, starts switching to the problem solving. Because the identity is the tougher one for her to hear. And so, and I'm not saying this is in real life. So what I really need to do before we can move on to any of those other thought process, those modes of communication, is be heard on that channel of identity.
So that's where taking the time to explore with him to say, you know, talk about, you know, what did it mean to be a buyer at Target? You know, what was it like? How long were you employed there? You know, the friends that, you know, the community he might have had. And so really taking the time to sit with him in that space rather than trying to switch the mode of communication and just identifying that can be really and really valuable.
I want to stop again. Karen, do we have some other questions?
One is, as a care receiver, how do you graciously turn down offers for coffee or lunch with people who seem to need you to be depressed or paralyzed by your situation and kind of project their feeling of pity onto you?
Yeah, I think, again, like those boundaries. I think it's okay to say, no, I don't need that right now. And I think I recognize it. I appreciate your wanting to, you know, take care of me. And, you know, maybe saying, like, hey, can we go do something together? Or, you know, appreciate that they want to, you know, spend time with you or do something for you and say, you know, just remind them that you're doing okay and reschedule for a different opportunity.
Yeah, I think, again, just honesty mm-hmm. of addressing those situations and coming from an authentic self of how do I approach this. And I know that our tendency as humans is to avoid hard conversations. But I have realized that oftentimes if we're able to address those hard conversations on the front end, it gets a lot less awkward on the back end of, well, I keep making excuses of not hanging out with you because I don't really want your help. And then eventually that just snowballs. Whereas if I was able to have that conversation on the front end of saying, I'm getting help in other ways, here's a way that you could help me.
And kind of going with what you were saying, this there was a death at the hospital, and the doctors and the nurses kind of distanced themselves mm-hmm. from this family. So why do people do that? Why do they withdraw? And what can we do to keep ourselves from reacting that way?
What I have noticed is this feeling of, one big thing is sometimes cultural differences. So that a family is grieving in a very different way than how I would grieve my loved one. They're being louder than I thought that you should be, or they're laughing more than I thought you should be, or they're crying violently more than I thought you should be. And so it's, again, leaving those expectations outside of the room and saying, these people need to grieve this loved one in the way that they need to grieve. And then again, it's the, especially in the medical world, and what I've seen over and over again is that they're there to heal people. And when people die, there's some feeling of failure there by medical professionals of saying, this person died on my watch, and I don't know how to address that within myself. So I think the way we can help with that is just realizing that we all grieve in our own right, and to just walk with those people as they grieve in their own grieving process.
And I think a lot of times we put that expectation on ourselves that we'll know what to do. And so if we don't know what to do, we're just going to avoid it. Where I think that's what we're talking about is being comfortable and knowing that you already have the tools that you need. God is already present. And so just entering that space, I think, is something that we can strive to do.
So I want to move on for just a little bit, and we'll come back to some more questions at the end. But so how do we invite God into this process? What does that look like? Is it just bringing a Bible and saying a prayer? What I want to use is this rope again. I know. For those that have been at Jacob's Well, they're used to this. But what our belief is in Jacob's Well is that our goal is to realize that we have three different entities kind of working in our lives at the same time. One is the self, one is community, and one is God. So what our goal is providing spiritual care is to start to weave in that third rope. To point to the fact that God is here and that those questions come up. Oftentimes these crisis situations happen because we have this box that we put God into. No matter how hard we try, there's some aspect, some box that we put God into. And when we face these hard situations of crisis, that box is no longer big enough to fit God into. And this situation. So that box blows up. And we have a role. We have limits. As human beings. But God doesn't. God is limitless. And so by inviting that third rope into this process, by weaving in that third rope, things can happen that we would never realize it. And so over and over again, we have this saying within chaplaincy that I absolutely love and that I've told to a lot of people in really tough situations that seem to ring home true, and that it's, why is not a question, it's a prayer. Why is not a question, it's a prayer. So it's not about asking the right or the wrong question that would make this idea of God completely collapse. Because oftentimes I can feel that tension with people as they're facing these tough situations. How can I even believe in God anymore when I'm facing these hard things? Why did this happen to me? Why did I lose my job? I can't answer that. I don't understand. I don't understand why bad things happen. If you know, if you could let me know, that would be great, because I could tell a lot of people and it would really help them. But I just don't think that's a question that we as humans can comprehend. And so what my encouragement is that we lay those questions at God's feet and realize God is big enough to answer those questions. God is big enough. And we can start that conversation with God there. So example of this is a few weeks ago, I was called into the ICU, and this 55-year-old woman had had a massive stroke out of nowhere. And she was with her husband and her three sons. They've been married for 30 years. And she was brain dead at that time, she was intubated, which means those in the medical professional can explain this a lot better than I can, but basically what it means is that they have a tube down your throat that's helping you breathe. And so they realized that this woman is virtually dead except for this tube, and so they were going to pull out this tube, extubate her. And so I got there, and she was still intubated. She still had the tube in, so I said a prayer and kind of did what I thought I needed to do as a chaplain of prayed and read a Bible verse, and it just didn't feel right to me, but I didn't know what else to do. And so they decided that after that prayer, they would extubate this woman. They would take out this tube because the family was ready for it at that time. And so I don't know if any of you have seen that process, but it is a gruesome, gruesome process. There's horrible sounds and visions, and I've seen it before, and I do not need to see it again. And so I kind of took the cowardly way out. This husband was going to stand by his wife as she was extubated, and I tried to get out of the room as quickly as possible. And as I'm walking out of the room, I hear, "Chaplain! Chaplain!" I was like, uh-oh. And so I turned around and was like, "Hey, what's up? Do you need another prayer or something? Can I read another Bible passage?" And he was like, "I need a man of God with me right now." And it's this woman, jeez, I'm getting choked up. As this woman who he'd been married to for 30 years was getting extubated, he grabbed onto a total stranger. Because at that moment, it was realizing that I wasn't me anymore, I was that third strand. Not in some arrogant way of saying, "I am God, you should all bow down to me," but this authentic idea that this person needed the hands and feet and a tangible presence of God in that moment. And that was me. That's the gift that we have for each other as a community. That's a gift that we have for each other as Jacob's Well. We get to be in sacred spaces. There's often times where I almost want to take my shoes off as I'm standing there, because I realize that there's something different here. Trust that. Trust that it's not just us as we enter into these situations. That third strand is present. And sometimes it just needs acknowledgement. And so, as we move to kind of receiving care, one of the parts about this is realizing that it's incredibly countercultural. We're not supposed to have to ask for help. We're supposed to be able to do this on our own. Let me tell you all, that's a lie. The God I believe in created us to live in community, to walk with other people. And so the verse that we have on the handout is this scene in which Simon Peter is with Jesus, and it's kind of near the end of his ministry in John, and Jesus is washing the feet of all of the disciples. And so he came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, you are going to wash my feet?" And Jesus answered, "You do not know what I am doing, but later you will understand." And Peter responded, like many of us in these situations, we don't want help, right? We can do this on our own. "You're too good to wash my feet." So Peter responds, "You will never wash my feet." And Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no share with me. Unless you get help yourself, you can't participate in this." Because we need, this is part of our humanity as people. We need people to care for us in order to care for others. Do you have anything to add there, or do you want to go to some questions?
I think this is a great time for questions.
Yeah.
You don't have
questions.
Any
questions. Right.
All right, we'll move on.
Well, then I kind of wanted to finish things up by saying that we, going back to that platitudes remark, and I think we have a slide for this, but actually, we'll go to this one. So part of what this receiving care from other people is recognizing the God in them. Remember how we talked with that woman in the mental health ward about the Imago Dei, the image of God. Well, getting help from other people is recognizing that it's bigger than who we are. That there's images of God in each and every one of you. And that if I don't ask for your help, I don't get to see that version of God. And so by asking for help, we get to a much bigger and broader sense of who God can be. So I just kind of want to take a second to breathe there. And bring this up to God. God, we know we can't do this alone. We don't want to do this alone. We don't want to try to care for other people without your presence there. It's too much. And yet, God, we recognize the fact that when we do care for other people and we do recognize your presence, that things can happen there that we never thought were possible. And God, we don't like asking for help. We struggle with that. It's hard. It's confusing. It's humbling. We want to recognize the fact that you are there. That you created us to be in community with one another. We thank you for that gift. Amen. Well, thank you all for being Jacob's Well this morning together. One bit of homework for all of us is to look for ways and listen for ways to put our Care IQ tools to work. And maybe pursue them in ways that are a little less of a tense situation. Practice them there. Go and be Jacob's Well. Thank you all.
Thanks for listening. If you found this podcast valuable, please pass it along to others. And we'd love to hear from you, too. You can email us at info@jacobs-well.net or message Jacob's Well Minneapolis on Facebook. We see what we do as a community really making a difference for people. Since you're listening, you probably have, too. If you'd like to make a donation to support this work, you can find ways at jacobs-well.net/give. Thanks. Listen again next week or join us in person Sunday mornings at 10:30.